Hey, you guys. It's Monday again. Holy crap, it feels like we just did one of these. Like fucking weeks are flying by.
Yeah, time goes by.
Once you get old, man.
Yeah.
It just seems like
a day's not even worth it. It's not.
That's you wake the up and you're that's like, the spirit.
Yeah, you wake up, you go, nah, there's not enough time. So you just go back to sleep. Because this shit's gonna take a week, you know.
Well, think about that. Well, the weird thing about that is that like time seems to go really fast, but also simultaneously really slowly, because I think it's because I woke up at like 5:30 this morning and couldn't go back to sleep. Mm-hmm. So finally it was like 6 or 6:30 and I was like, fuck it. And I just got up. And so I started like working and stuff. So by the time it was noon, I was like, fuck man, I've already done like a full work day. I wish I could. You know what I mean?
Got my hand. Let go. You got claws in my hand.
Poke. Whoa. Oh, ow. Well, ow, that's your ow. Fault for putting that down there like that.
Yeah. Poke it. Damn, she got me.
Yeah,
she hooked me with a claw. She didn't realize it.
She's like, "Why you put your hand there, Daddy? I'm gonna fuck it up."
Ow. Well, I had the mouse.
Oh,
I was playing with the mouse, and she grabbed my
hand.
She's
like, "Why you take my mouse?
Right in it's like,
don't take my mouthy."
But I couldn't yank it away. You know what I mean? It made it worse. So I just had to wait for her to let go. It's going. It's right above the nail too, like 2 millimeters above the damn fingernail.
Yikes!
Yeah, it hurt.
John Smith said, it's true, I'm in my 40s and years are flying by.
Yeah.
Long-term prisoners say the seconds drag, but the decades fly by. Yeah, that makes sense. I get that. Yeah, Sebastian says, I'm in my 50s and I feel it. Yeah, I'm going to be 50, actually, a week from today. Next Monday.
Yeah.
Is my birthday. So we're going to have to do, we'll have to do a special birthday episode of A Haunting.
Oh, shit.
I don't know, like, which one it's going to be. Is there any haunting episode that has like a birthday on it?
I don't know.
I don't remember. I've seen so many, but that would be like funny if we did that.
I can't remember.
I can't either. I'll look it up. We have till next week to figure that out. But yeah, the one we're doing today is The Calling, which is season 4, episode 3. This is one that somebody recommended a few weeks ago. And I thought that they were, I didn't know if they were just like recommended because they just kind of said the name of it like without any context. So I wasn't sure if they were just like recommending like, hey, do this one, or if they were saying that that was the one that you were talking about with the slave guy and all that stuff. Which, like I said, wasn't what that was called. That was called Demon's Revenge, and that was the one we did last week. So The Calling is completely different. Completely different. John Smith said, how long until people are spotting the Queen's ghost? I'm surprised nobody said that they've seen it already. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'll be the first. I mean, it won't be true, but I can say anything.
You can only see her up in England.
You don't know that. I mean,
she's
maybe
gonna be up there.
Maybe she wanted to like vacation in Florida, and so that's where her ghost is going to hang out. That's my story, and I'm sticking to it.
Okay. Well, I don't want to see her. She's been around forever.
Yeah, but maybe she'd be, like, young and hot.
She wasn't that hot when she was young. Come on.
Well, no, I'm just saying. But, you know, if you got to choose, like, your ghost form, you'd think that you would choose, like, your hottest time period.
According to the stories, that's not what happens.
Yeah, but nobody knows.
A lot of hags have been seen as ghosts.
Maybe they chose to look like that because it was scarier. Because I kind of feel like I'd be tempted to go that route, too.
Okay.
Robert said, you're going to be 50. I don't believe it. Yeah, neither do I sometimes. But, yep. I only have a week left of being in my 40s, and then I'll be in my 50s.
Yeah, 40 hits, and then all of a sudden 50. Bam, it's instant.
Soon you die.
Yeah. Doesn't matter. It's all temporary.
Here we go with the nihilism again.
No, it doesn't matter. It's only temporary anyway.
Nicholas says, Ghost Soldier has a birthday. The one where the woman becomes obsessed with a picture of her ex's brother. Maybe we should do that one.
Yeah.
I remember that being a pretty good episode.
I remember being all right. Yeah,
that was pretty good.
Yeah, it wasn't one of my favorites, but it was pretty good.
Yeah, it was one that I remembered because it was like a little bit different because it had the thing. I kind of like some of the ones that have like cursed object kind of action on it.
Yeah.
Like a cursed painting or... Well, wait, Dybbuk Box, that wasn't a haunting, was it? That was Paranormal Witness.
Yeah. We bought two of the newer seasons. I was pissed that you could only get digital versions. I said, man, I'd like to get that on disc. But now that I've seen two seasons of them, I was like, nah, I don't want that on disc.
Now, aren't you glad that you
they're
didn't?
Fucking, yeah. They're not made poorly. It's just the stories suck. They're not about ghosts.
Mostly no.
Mostly not about ghosts, yeah. They're trying to branch off into new shit. And the seasons are very short. They have like 6 episodes in them. They're not long seasons.
I don't even remember. Like, what did we buy? Like, season 8?
It was 8 and 9, I think, wasn't it?
Which, season 8 was mostly okay. And then we tried to buy 9 and 10, but they weren't available. So then I think you bought 11.
You had to go like 11 or 12.
And then we started watching 11. That one, most of them were just kind of dumb. Or like not. Yeah. Well, the thing that we noticed, I don't remember if I brought this up before, but the thing that we noticed that kind of made it not as good, like not only were the stories not as good and didn't really have a lot of just like haunted house or possession type stuff, they were trying to go off in like silly directions, like I said, mummies and all that kind of crap.
Yeah, mummies and
yeah, so there's like all kind of weird shit like haunted masks, and I'm just kind of like, okay, yeah, whatever.
That's right.
But one thing that I noticed is that they seem to, and I'm guessing that this was a money-saving enterprise, that they clearly don't shoot as much footage, because they'll do like the segment and then it'll go to like commercial, but obviously it doesn't go to commercial because we bought it, but then it comes right back and then it like spends 1 or 2 minutes like recapping.
The recap's long.
What you just saw, and it's like, because I feel like on the old shows, it did kind of a recap, but it just did like a boop, 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 like little collage of images that took like a second, like 10 seconds. They're just like, yep, here's what we've seen, now we're moving on. Whereas like the new ones, it's just kind of like, it's just kind of like 1 or 2 minutes of like, here's the shit that you just saw like 30 seconds ago, here it is again. You know what I mean? Like with the same footage. And maybe like,
gratuitous recap. They're just trying to flesh it out. The scores are more generic. They're more like, you could tell they're kind of a little bit more canned feeling to them.
Yeah, I wonder what those. Maybe it's not the same person like doing.
Or they're reusing old stuff and just kind of patching it in there.
Maybe
some of it didn't seem to fit.
Yeah, I don't know. I just didn't like it.
No, but they
as
put
much.
A folk song in one of them.
Yeah, that's lyrics. Right. That's right.
That was when she was talking about going to Thailand.
No, India.
India, that's right. It just,
I kind of thought they were just trying to make it seem like, oh, because we're doing one that's in India and like a ghost followed her back.
Yeah.
From India, so we're trying to give it that India flavor.
They're not as tight.
Yeah.
They're not as tight. They're not like little movies like these are. These are like little movies.
Yeah.
Movies that have voiceover and, you know, narration and kind of like a documentary. It's a documentary, but in a movie form. No way to describe it. It's a horror movie made to feel like a documentary to make it seem like it's something that actually happened. Whether it did or not, that's part of the show. You know, we address that in these little episodes, whether or not we think it happened.
What do you think about this one, or would that be a spoiler alert?
Spoiler.
Usually you're all about, like, just saying all the shit up front. You don't have to. I'm just asking.
Yeah, see, she presses me, and then she goes, well, you don't have to. This one has some paranormal investigators involved in it that did collect some evidence. So I think there might have been something to this one. It's not as impressive as some of the other ones. But then again, you know what I mean? Like, the tales are not as impressive.
Right.
The phenomena that was reported isn't quite as impressive. But evidently, according to the investigators, she passed a few tests about picking names out of a lineup and picking faces out of a lineup without any prompting. I wasn't there. That'd be easy to fake. You know what I mean? To collude to make a good case. But the claims aren't fucking outlandish.
No, not really.
Not really.
And the thing about this one is that this one mostly just revolved around her, like the lady. And I don't really remember there being any particular like physical manifestations. Like nothing was like thrown around or like hearing, you know, thumping or anything like that. It just seemed like mostly her seeing and hearing things. And I don't think anybody else did.
She had a psychic ability to see the dead. Or see things that had happened in the past to the dead or whatever. She was kind of like, I guess you'd call a medium. But she didn't have to be in a trance. She could just pick it up.
She was like kid in The Sixth Sense.
Kind of like a kid in The Sixth Sense, yeah.
That would kind of suck, honestly. Because you'd think that there'd be fucking ghosts everywhere. If ghosts exist, then they'd be all over the fucking place. And if you could actually see them all the time, man.
But she was having fun as a kid. Didn't scare her.
I guess
not. It was
her
dad that was a dick about it.
Yeah, her dad was really a dick about it.
So, you know, I don't think it'd be a problem. You know, you might be able to put that to good use. That'd be a good survival skill.
That's true.
Yeah.
But I kind of feel like I said, if you could... You'd have to selectively see ghosts, though. Because if you saw all the ghosts, then that would probably just be too many, and it would just be, like, constant fucking...
Well, your subconscious handles that.
I guess so.
And filters out.
Tom's got this all figured out. You got it all figured out?
Of course. Well, I've had phenomena like this happen. So, you know, your subconscious would filter out unimportant ones. You'd never see those. It was just the ones that were more relevant to the time and place that you were in. You might become aware of those, you know.
Yeah, I guess so.
Sure.
Yeah.
The brain's fantastic. It's magical. It's a quantum computer.
I have a magical brain.
Yeah, it's a quantum computer. It can do fucking fantastic stuff. Part of it is in another dimension. Part of it is in another dimension we would call the spirit realm. Slightly outside of space-time continuum. It's where you go when you astrally project. Part of your mind's in there. But it's not your conscious being. It's mostly your unconscious. Kind of like Jungian, Carl Jung's cosmic unconscious kind of deal.
Yeah, we're all going to, like, messing around with all the fucking everyone else's consciousnesses.
Yeah.
We're all playing in the yard with
it's quantum
all
radio.
Sure.
Quantum internet.
So, yeah, we got lots and lots of people in here. It looks like all of our regulars are here. You want to start on the episode and you can just kind of... I actually did take notes while I was watching the episode again last night, so all I had to do today was type them over, so I didn't actually have to watch it twice, but I remembered this one. And the lady that's in this... God damn it, I meant to look up that actress's name. Because the lady that's in this one that, like, plays the main woman... she's been in a bunch of episodes, but I can't remember what the other ones were, because I meant to look up her IMDb
page. She's just in a shit ton of them.
But she's, like, in a whole bunch of them. And she's, I kind of feel like she's been in more of them than any of the other actors. Because where's that raccoon guy? Wasn't he in another one?
He was in a few.
I thought he was in a few, too. But this lady was in, like, a fuck ton of episodes. Yeah. Like, she was in at least four or five of them, I'm pretty sure. But, yeah, so she's in this one, too. But, like I said, I meant to look it up because I was, like, trying to figure out... I'm trying to remember, like, what other episode she was in, but I forgot. So, you know, there we go.
She's got to be in 20 of them, so...
Well, I don't know about 20, but I was going to say maybe, like, five of them.
She's real familiar.
And that one girl that was in the one we did the other day, she was in a couple of them, too.
Yeah.
And like I said, I remembered her because she kind of looked like one of my cousins when she was a kid. So she stood out. But I don't know why, but this woman's, like, been in a fuck ton of them. So, yeah, like I said, this is season... I think it's season 4, episode 3, I want to say. Like, so I keep wanting to say it's season 3, episode 4, but it's not. I'm pretty sure it's season 4. Now, this is another one... I'm going to say right now that it's like it wasn't really... I couldn't really find any outside information about this particular case or this particular woman or anything like that because this was another one where the real people appeared in shadow and so consequently were not using their real names. They did have a couple of paranormal investigators on there who showed their faces and they said what their names are, but I'll get into that in a little bit because I couldn't really find either one of them. But I'm not really sure how to spell that one guy's last name. And so I tried to, like, look for it, but nothing was coming up. So I don't really know if he's got a group or I don't really know. So,
this was quite a while ago.
Yeah, I mean, this episode, when did it first air? 2004?
I think it's what it said, 2004.
It's either 2004 or 2007. It's probably 2004.
I thought it said 4.
Yeah, maybe it did. Like I said, it was far away, so I couldn't really tell. Because it says on the disc, because we have this on the disc, and it has three or four episodes on each disc, and then it'll say first aired, blah-de-blah. And yeah. I couldn't tell if it was 2004 or 2007. Okay, so this one actually starts out in New Jersey in the fall of 1974. Now, there's a cop named Bill Mallory, not his real name, apparently. And he's in a car with his 5-year-old daughter, Rebecca, who is kind of the main focus of our thing here. Also not her real name, I'm presuming. So Rebecca has been seeing the ghost of her great-grandfather, who she calls Pop-Pop, ever since he died. And it's, like, not even a big deal to her. She just, like, sees him, like you would see a living person. And she just, like, talks to him, and it's, like, and it's no thing.
Kind of like how that girl used to see Mr. Gordy.
Yeah, right.
If you guys have seen the pilot, that's a good episode.
Julianne Pope said, I think her name is Kelly Davis, that actress. She's also in Cobra Kai on Netflix. Is she?
I didn't notice that.
I didn't notice her either, and yeah. You'd think that we'd be like, hey, it's that lady from Haunting. Yeah.
She looks like Jeffrey Combs' little sister. If Jeffrey Combs had a little sister, it'd be her. Put some glasses on her. She had glasses on and goes, man, she looks like Jeffrey Combs from fucking Herbert West Reanimated. Yeah.
I guess she does, kind of. Well, like, yeah. When Jeffrey Combs was young in the 80s. Yeah, yeah. But yeah, we were talking about that last night. He said she looked like Jeffrey Combs.
Yeah.
So this one particular night, apparently, so the dad's driving. Yeah, obviously, the 5-year-old kid isn't driving. But so the little girl is in the front seat or the back seat, I don't know. And the car pulls up at a red light behind this dude on a motorcycle. Now, Rebecca, like, she says that Pop-Pop, or the ghost of her great-grandpa, is in the back seat and says, hey, tell your dad, don't go. Like, when the light turns green, just wait. And so Rebecca says, you should wait, like, when the light... She doesn't say, like, how she knows that. She just says, you know, don't go yet. So her dad doesn't go. And then, like, the motorcycle guy, like, goes into the intersection. There was a big, huge wreck. So the dad is, like, wigging out. And she's kind of wigging out because she sees, like, the motorcycle... I don't think the motorcycle guy was killed or anything, but he looked, like, kind of fucked up. And dad's like, well, how did you know that? Like, that I should wait? And she said, Pop-Pop told me, like, he was in the car. Now dad, he doesn't really believe any of this psychic nonsense, and there's kind of a scene of the little girl kind of sitting over here in the living room, and then, like, the mom and dad, like, arguing about it. And the dad, like I said, you know, these are not the real people, obviously, and the real Rebecca is in shadow, so I don't actually know what her real name is. So I don't really know if this is how it actually was or just how she perceived it, but the mom and dad are kind of, like, fighting about it, and the dad is being a real douche about it. She's like, look, she's too old to have imaginary friends. Or didn't he say something like that? I'm like, she's 5. That's too old to have imaginary friends. A lot of kids have imaginary friends, like, older than that, for sure. But so, yeah, he's being, like, a real douche about it. But she's like, yeah, but, like, in... I don't know if she was talking about Pop-Pop, the great-grandfather, or somebody else in the family, but she said, oh, somebody else in the family also could also see dead people, apparently, or could psychically communicate with dead people. It's like, maybe she, you know, inherited that trait or whatever, and he's just like, whatever, fucking, and he just, like, doesn't believe any of it, right? What?
No, I'm just saying that even though Stephen King was a fiction writer, he did a lot of really good research, and he would read about what was happening out in California and places like UCLA and in their parapsychology department. And a good way to describe all this stuff is pretty much the way Mr. Halloran describes it in The Shining. Okay? It's like pictures in a book. It's not real. Certain places have something that's kind of like Shining, you know. Sometimes bad things can happen and traces are left behind, kind of like burnt toast. Just because you see a ghost doesn't mean that ghost is there. It's like pictures in a book. You know what I mean? That person may have been in that area in the past, but that soul may not necessarily be there, even though you can interact with it. But it's kind of like a hologram and it's kind of like the hologram, and you're having like a dream-like episode where you can actually interact with it. But it's not there. Although it may be able to hurt you. Which, that's what happens in the book The Shining with Danny.
Yeah.
He'd see stuff that happened. It would interact with him. It could sometimes touch him and hurt him, but it wasn't really there. Those souls weren't there, maybe. But it would depend on the situation. And some places, shine, or have something like shining. In Star Wars terminology, you would say it was a place that was strong with the dark side. I believe all that because I've experienced things like that. If not exactly that sometimes, sometimes that, sometimes just stuff kind of like that. And have an NDE or near-death experience, you can kind of see from another perspective slightly how things like this are probably real. I'm not going to say could be real. I could see how certain things could exist based on things that I saw, other things that I know exist. So, I don't know. I'm just throwing that in there. Her seeing these ghosts doesn't necessarily mean that those ghosts are there doing what it is that she sees at that particular time. It's like a picture book.
Yeah, could be. Yeah. Although, like I said, if any of this is true, like the fact that great-grandpa there knew that there was going to be a wreck, that would seem to indicate that he was interacting with her in real time.
It might be her psychic abilities. And it just uses Pop-Pop as an avatar, in the same way Danny's Shining had the avatar of Tony. There was no Tony.
He's the little boy who lives in my
bed. There was no Tony. Tony was a way...
I love that.
Tony was a way for Danny to explain his abilities to himself without having to take direct responsibility for him. Might be the same with this girl. It's her doing this, but her version of Tony is modeled after her grandfather, or was it great grandfather?
Yeah, I think it was great. I think it was great grandfather.
Right.
So I think it was her mom's grandfather.
Yeah, Pop-Pop's probably long gone, but she's keeping kind of an internal avatar of him.
Yeah.
To help her explain what's happening to herself. In other words, it's her like super ego has the image is built in the image of Pop-Pop.
But yeah, the mom says to the dad that, you know, Pop, I think she's talking about Pop-Pop, like which would be her grandfather, I guess. And she's saying that he knew exactly how he was going to die. Like, he told the whole family, hey, I'm out of here. Like, I'm not going to be around after the weekend. And they said that he died that Saturday. Like, he knew exactly when he was going to die. And so that he always had that power, too. So they're thinking that maybe she inherited it. And so, like I said, Rebecca, meanwhile, doesn't think it's weird at all because she sees Pop-Pop all the time. It's like they're sitting in her room playing and all kind of stuff. And she just, like, is always talking to him. And she didn't think it was weird. So then they jump ahead, like, a year later when she's six. And Rebecca is walking down the street with her mom and dad. And then she sees a guy sitting on some steps, like in front of an apartment building. And she stops to talk to him. And he says, hi, what's your name? My name's Carl, blah, blah, blah. And so she starts talking to him. And then they show that she's talking to nobody. And her dad gets super, super aggro about it. I mean, really, I know this is actors, like I said, but it seemed like a drastic overreaction. I'm just saying, it was a drastic overreaction. He gets, like, really, really mad. He's yelling at her, look, there's nobody there. If you're really seeing things, then you should just block it all out because basically I'm sick of dealing with it and you're a weird kid and I'm not having it. So, you know, he makes the poor little kid cry and she's like, okay, I'll try to, like, do that. And so then they kind of interview the real woman, like, in shadow, and she says, so basically, after that episode, she's like, so from the age of 6 or 7 onward, I learned to either, like, block out the sightings, like, just if I saw the shit, I would just ignore it, or if I couldn't ignore it, then I would just keep the shit to myself, because I figured that my dad was gonna yell at me, and that I would get in trouble. So I was like, that's really sad, but okay. She said she did that all throughout her teenage years, and into her 20s, and kind of got used to doing that. You know what I mean? So they said she got married in 1995 and had a couple kids, but then had like a really bad, like an acrimonious divorce several years later. Now in 2002, she moves to Southeastern Virginia from New Jersey, presumably, with her two kids. Now at this point, she has a son that's 7. On the show, they call him Tim, and you know, she has a 5-year-old daughter named Hannah. Again, probably not their real names, obviously, because she's not using hers. The kids don't really factor into it all that much, so it doesn't really matter if you know what their names are. So since she was a single mom and she was like working really long hours, I don't think did they say what she did? Was she a nurse or something? Like, I don't remember if they said what she did. I didn't write it down anyway. So she's like, since she was so busy all the time, she found it a lot easier to block out the spirit sightings. Because apparently, like, from what she was saying, it sounded like she always had them, but she just gotten to a point where she's just like, nope, not seeing that. You know what I mean? Like, she was able to, like, kind of shut it out a little bit. So she was doing some charity work, she said, at some children's hospital when she meets this dude named Daniel Lennox. Now, he was on, this is obviously not his real name either. He was on the show too, but also in Shadow. I think they said he was a dentist. And he said, I don't know, I just, for some reason I thought this was funny. But he said when he met her at this conference or whatever, he was engaged to somebody else. But then, like, when he met Rebecca, it's like they just, like, hit it off right away. So he just, like, broke off the engagement with the other chick. So him and Rebecca got married, like, really quickly. I don't know how quickly, but quickly, they said. And they moved into this big new house, and they start talking about having another kid, and everything's, like, this big fairy tale family, yada yada. Now, immediately, though, Rebecca starts kind of feeling a bit weirded out in the new house. Now, on the show, they actually showed her when she first comes in there, like, when they first move in, like, that she heard a child giggling. Now, she didn't say that in that interview, so I don't know if that's true or not. Now, but she did say that she heard that, like, later on, like, during those events. So I'm assuming they're just, like, extrapolating that she came in and heard that. So a few weeks after that, she says, she was out working in the yard, and then she looks over and she sees this spooky little ghost boy kind of standing in the grass. Now, she tries to block it out because she said it was pretty scary. And, you know, at this point, like I said, she's kind of gotten used to blocking stuff out by now. But for some reason, she's like, she couldn't block this one out. And so she starts to think that maybe stuff might be ramping up or coming back, like, in, like, with a vengeance or whatever, and kind of threatening this whole nice, normal life that she's constructed for herself with her new family and whatnot. So Rebecca doesn't tell Daniel about the ghost, and she also obviously doesn't tell him that she's been seeing ghosts since she was a little kid, you know, obviously for obvious reasons, because she's afraid that that he'll think she's a nut. So she tries to keep everything normal, but she keeps seeing the ghost kid still. Like, at one point, she goes out in the backyard, and she sees the creepy little kid, like, standing by the picnic table in the backyard. Like, her daughter is sitting at the table and doesn't see him, but she comes out, and he's standing there, and she's just like, oh, shit, and she, like, freaks out and makes the daughter come inside. So, and the daughter's like, what the fuck, Mom? You know what I mean? Like, she didn't really, but that's what I was thinking. So then after that, she makes the daughter come in the house. And then, like, then she sees the ghost boy in the house, like, just walking down the hallway, like, do-do-do, like that. So she's basically like, okay, well, I guess I'm just going to see this kid everywhere now. But, and I guess I just have to accept that fact. But I'm still not going to tell anybody about it. Now, her husband knows probably something's up with her, but doesn't really press the issue, like, doesn't, because she does obviously doesn't want to tell him what's going on, so he's just kind of like, okay, well, whenever you want to tell me, you'll tell me, and I'll just, like, back off you. Now, shortly after this, the TV keeps coming on by itself, and it's always cartoons. I don't know if that's what it was really like or not. So Rebecca said she kept seeing this damn kid, like, pretty much every day, like, it's a ghost kid. So finally, like, the TV keeps coming on, she keeps seeing the kid and everything like that. So she shouts at the ghost kid to just, like, stop it, and I think she tells him to, like, go away. And then she said she immediately felt really bad because she's like, you know, I know it's a ghost and everything, but that's still a kid. You know what I mean? So it's kind of shitty to, hey, get the fuck out of here, you ghostly little brat. But yeah, so she said she felt really bad about it. Now, later on that night, while she's in bed, her blanket kind of gets tugged some, and it just, like, wakes her up. But, of course, she looks around, and there's nobody in the room, right? And then, apparently, the covers are pulled, like, all the way off, and she said she started to feel a weird pressure on her leg. So when she looks at her leg, she sees what appears to be a child-size bite mark. It looked like it was on her calf, like, on the side of her calf. She also hears the boy giggling, but she made a point to say the giggling wasn't sinister necessarily. It was just like a kid giggling, like almost like mischievous or something like that. So Rebecca finally goes in the other room and shows Daniel the bite marks. And he's just like, well, what did one of the kids bite you? Because he's like, he was a dentist. So he was just kind of like, he's like, yeah, that's a kid's bite mark. All right. They said you could even see, like, the top four teeth were all, like, crooked. You know what I mean? Like a kid's teeth would be. And so basically she's like, no, you know, our living kids didn't do this. There's a ghost kid in the house and I've been seeing him for a long time and the little shit bit me. So he's pretty incredulous about this, I guess, as you would be. But to his credit, he does actually believe her pretty much right away. And so he takes a picture of the bite mark. And but Rebecca doesn't tell him. She does tell him about the ghost boy, but she doesn't tell him that she's been seeing ghosts her whole life, though, and that she's been trying to, like, suppress the gift all this time. So Daniel wants to contact the paranormal investigators, and Rebecca doesn't really want to do that because she's like, I was just kind of hoping that all of this would go away, you know what I mean? It was just seemed like too much trouble. But Daniel is just kind of like, he's reading all these paranormal websites. I love, like, there's always one part in all of these episodes where somebody's like, and then they went to the internet and, like, looked up paranormal stuff, as though everybody in the world that has seen a single horror movie, like, knows all of the stuff, like, all about Sage and all this. Like, everybody knows that now. You don't have to look on the internet to, like, how to get rid of ghosts. You know what I mean? It's just kind of like, I don't know. It's almost kind of a thing where, like, you know how, like, in old vampire movies, they're always kind of like, oh, we pull out this old book, and it's like, and this is vampires, and it's garlic. I'm like, bitch, everybody knows that. Everybody. So I just, you don't have to look it up. So I kind of feel like it was the same kind of thing that he had to look up on the paranormal website to, like, figure out what to do. I was just like, wave some sage around. That's what they always do. So, actually, this was kind of a little bit different because this paranormal website, I guess, they said, well, why don't you just yell at the ghost to go away? Because sometimes that's all it takes, you know, if you have some kind of, like, ghost that's, you know, it's kind of a wimp, and he'll just be like, oh, okay, sorry, didn't mean to bother you, and he'll just leave. So he shouts at the ghost to go away, hoping that will solve the problem. Now, they end up calling this place called the Center for Paranormal Research and Investigation, which is apparently still around. I looked at their website. I got confused because I don't know. This first paranormal woman that came, I didn't know if the second guy that came, like the guy and the woman that came later that did, like, more of an investigation type deal, I don't know if they were affiliated with this first group. Like, I thought they were from the show, but then when I was, like, looking it up, I was like, well, I looked on their website, and no fucker on that website, like, looks anything like those other two people that they were talking about. So I'm thinking maybe the second two people were from another group.
All right.
You know what I'm saying? Maybe. I don't know. They weren't real clear on that on the show, or either that, or I didn't really get it. So I don't know. But the first one they call is the Center for Paranormal Research and Investigation, which is in Richmond, Virginia, or near Richmond, Virginia. So a week later, I don't think a whole team came. I think just one woman came because she just came, like, for the, you know, initial assessment or whatever, like, to see what was going on. Now, so she gets there, and Rebecca, who was not real down with this idea, so she just kind of tries to downplay everything. Oh, it wasn't really that big of a deal. I just kind of saw this boy, but it's nothing. It's like, I'm sure it'll be fine, blah, blah, blah. She doesn't really want to, like, exacerbate it, and she doesn't want to get into her whole history with seeing ghosts and shit like that, and I think she doesn't really want Daniel to know any of this stuff, so she's really, really trying to, like, keep it on the down low, and she's just kind of like, yeah, it's fine. It'll be fine. And Daniel was just sitting there going, you know, here she is talking to this lady, and she's was freaking out about it a week ago, but now she's being like, no, it's fine, like, don't worry about it. So the investigator, I guess, since she's not getting much info out of Rebecca, she basically shrugs and says, well, maybe the ghost will go away on its own, you know, maybe everything will work out and it'll be fine. So then they said 2 weeks went by with no activity, and Rebecca kind of forgets about it. But then, sorry, I just looked over at the chat, and I saw Bleared OG say, Ghost Kid, talk about pop music. New York, London, Paris, Munich. But yeah, so I just saw that, and I had to laugh. Oh, we got a new person. What's up, Anna? Evening from Canada, newbie here. Well, hello, welcome. We do these every Monday. I mean, we do a show almost every day, but we do the haunting shows on Monday. So, maybe the ghost will go away on its own. Bye. 2 weeks go by, no activity. And then Rebecca's like, phew, well, maybe that's over. But then she's, like, standing at the kitchen window, like, doing the dishes or whatever. And she sees another ghost standing out in the yard. Like, this one's a grown man, like, but kind of wearing clothes that look like, you know, a few decades ago, like. And while she's standing there in the kitchen, she said she heard a bunch of voices, like two voices, I think she said it sounded like two voices, that sounded like two guys shouting, and also something that sounds like a plane engine, and then a crash. So she's kind of freaking out, and Daniel comes running into the kitchen, and apparently it's really loud to her because she's like screaming like, you can't hear that? And he's like, yeah, I don't hear that. And she's like, wow, I must look like a real fucking Looney Tune. But she said, yeah, I heard all this noise. She says that she couldn't pick out some of what they said, but she said she definitely heard P-51 Mustang. And she says that. And then Daniel is actually surprised because he's like, oh, well, those were planes used in World War II. And he didn't think that Rebecca knew anything about that. So the fact that she came up with that just out of the blue was kind of weirded him out.
Because she said she could hear it and he couldn't, it immediately made me think that it was something she was accessing. It wasn't it's an internal phenomenon in this case, not something external. Although it can be both, depending on what the situation is. But in this particular thing, she's picking up something out of the environment.
And maybe it's manifesting to her, if she's actually seeing what she's saying. Maybe it is manifesting to her as a person, seeing it.
She's picking up information, and her brain then interprets it as a 3D moving hologram message. You can even interact with it. It's not there, but all that information's true. It's something from the past. A lot of it, I think, has to do with, like I said, what Mr. Halloran said. Some places have something kind of like Shining. And things happen that sometimes leaves residue behind, kind of like burnt toast. So she's picking up the residue of something that happened a long time ago in a place. And she's seeing this in places that are strong with the dark side, I guess you could say. Places that have a shine to them or something that's like Shine. And her brain picks it up and sees it as a 3D message. You can even interact with it.
Help me, Obi-Wan, you're my only hope.
Yeah, like that. But it's some kind of quantum information that the mind unravels and sees it as an experience, kind of like a dream. It's not there, but all the information in it would be real. You'd see how the person would look like. You could have a conversation with them. You could get real information from them. It may not be real complicated, but, you know, basic information, you'd be able to pick it up. That's what I think's happening in this particular case.
That would be kind of neat, but also kind of horrifying at the same time. I mean, I guess if you had had that since childhood, it wouldn't seem all that weird to you because that would just be like your experience of
the
world.
Not too far removed from animal abilities like dogs and scent. They can smell something, smell another dog's piss, and know everything a damn about the dog. Imagine if there's something like a psychic version of that where your mind picks up quantum particles, and your mind is probably this quantum cloud, kind of like Stuart Hameroff says. It picks up this quantum particles, and you're now experiencing a hologram that's interactive, kind of like, and you probably interpret it as a vision, and it's kind of dreamlike, you know, but it's all accurate information. You can even talk to it, kind of like Superman in the Fortress of Solitude talking to his dad, you know, like that.
Yeah,
like his dad was long gone.
But that would be kind of cool.
But it's like that.
But like I said, I'm guessing if you grew up like that, you'd probably be used to it after a while. Yeah. Like it wouldn't be scary after a while, I would think.
Like I said, I like to use terminology that you guys can relate to, and like Stephen King stuff and Star Wars stuff. So I'm, you know, I'll quote stuff that comes out of fiction, but it's based in things that really happened. You know what I mean? King knew about parapsychology. He was getting this from other people. He wasn't making this up himself. Same with Lucas. He got that shit from Joseph Campbell.
Yeah, well, I mean, I kind of feel like a lot of fiction writers get stuff from there.
And Campbell got all that from Buddhism and German philosophy.
Anna's talking about She says, I brought a family of four home with a silver tea service I got at a free store. And Bearded Dude said, of course the tea service is cursed. And Anna said, not cursed. It was a prized family possession and they were hurt. It was given away like trash. They saw I took care of it and they left a week later.
Okay.
That's kind of cool. They're just kind of like, we want to make sure that like y'all are going to take care of that shit. You know what I mean? That's our favorite thing. I can see that. All right. So, yeah. So World War II plane. All right. Now, so Rebecca, like I said, she's keeps seeing this stuff and she's starting to get more and more withdrawn because, like I said, she doesn't really want to tell Daniel any more about it. And Daniel, like many a man on this show, is upset that he can't just like fix it because they always want they and they a couple of them have actually said that too. Like they just wanted to. He said that on this show that he's like, I was just upset that I couldn't just like fix it because the paranormal thing. We've talked about this a lot because we talked about this on the one with your friend Ed Dunham, the Deltona one.
Yeah.
And actually an episode we watched the other day, I don't remember if we talked about it or not, but the guy actually said on there something that we had said like as a joke, like on a previous show, that the guys like they don't know how to deal with the ghost because they can't punch it.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, so I just thought that was funny. It's like, well, I can't punch it and throw it out the house, so I'm out of options. I don't really know what to do. So, yes.
Yeah, I'm gonna quote some more. King. And actually, from the book, if I remember correctly, shit that Halloran said. Reason why this happens to dudes who get pissed off and they can't punch it. Halloran, in one part of the book, says something that's true, and I've found it to be true, too. Pretty much everybody shines. Most people only shine a little bit. A lot of people shine pretty good, okay? And most of them don't know that they do, okay? Some people shine a lot. In my experience, it's always kids. Kids going through puberty sometimes, or young, you know, between 10 and 14. That's when most people shine the brightest. And that's the time when actually things can manifest under right circumstances with the right kid. It's rare to get an adult that can shine like that. Some can, but it's very rare. And the phenomenon is going to be a lot different with an older person. With a young person, it's going to be a lot more chaotic, a lot more out of control, more emotional. The only people I think don't shine, there's something wrong with them, either physically or mentally. You can kind of see it. Okay, like when I'm listening to interviews of serial killers, and I said they're lizard-like, they kind of have that pathological liar voice pattern to them. Those people don't shine at all. It's like a black hole. It's like a non-entity. Like there's no soul. That's what it feels like to me.
But yeah, I mean, they definitely do come across like that.
Yeah, they don't even come across as evil to me. They just come
across... No, they don't.
They come across as nothing.
Yeah, I get what you're saying.
Yeah.
They just come across as like a void.
Yeah, like a robot.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, not like a person.
Right.
Or not like someone that's not fully there.
Yeah.
I guess. The way a normal human is.
Yeah. A truly evil person can shine. All right? They can have a lot of talent. And this goes back to things that Friedrich Nietzsche and Arthur Schopenhauer said. It says this: you can take a great person and if you fucking beat them up and torture them enough, they can turn into quite a monster. But they have a lot of willpower and a lot of, and they could do a lot of damage, but they're very rare. When you have a person like that. And it's a lot of times is that they always think they're doing good. You know what I mean? Very different. Serial killers know they're not doing good.
Yeah, they just don't give a shit.
Yeah. A truly evil person thinks that what they're doing is good. That they are fighting evil. All right? But they might have it kind of twisted around. Or they have a very different view, you know. But there's a lot of... And some people that shine that are kind of a weird mixture... Ones that I kind of like, which are kind of like warrior types. Like, anytime I hear recordings of Patton, George Patton. And I know George Patton knew about the paranormal. He was into that, okay? I could feel a guy who shied, and he was a good, great leader. Also, MacArthur. MacArthur had a lot of shine to him. They weren't good men, but they were great. They were very great. They were kind of the warlord types. So just giving you examples. And it makes me think that guys like Washington were probably like that too. Not really good, but they weren't evil either. They were just great. And sometimes great could be terrible. It all depends on your point of view. If you're fighting them, you don't want to fight them. They'll kill you, you know. So differing opinions, it will cost you with those kind of people.
Sorry, I was just thinking when you were talking about how evil people like think that they're doing good and stuff. I was thinking of that. What the fuck was that British sketch show that had that whole sketch on there about the two Nazi soldiers being like, "Are we the baddies?" Yeah. Yeah. Like they just realized it.
Yeah.
It was super, super funny.
Well, no, that's
that was
accurate.
Well, that's why it was funny.
Yeah.
That's what I mean. That's why it was funny.
A lot of these dumb kids today look at that, what happened in World War II, and they think that that the Germans thought they were bad. No, they thought they were the ultimate good. They saw themselves as fighting evil. And everything that they were doing was to keep their people safe from people that were trying to hurt them. And they were killing people, whole families, because they thought that they were diseased, dirty, bad, evil, trying to hurt them, that they wouldn't share, that kind of stuff. The people that couldn't be socialist, people that couldn't be morally right. They were cleaning up the place, getting rid of garbage. You got to be real careful with sanctimony. if you think you're better than other people and sanctimonious and see other people as just evil, bad people, you'll kill them. And it's really just a difference of an opinion. Even Obi-Wan said, many of the truths that we cling to often depend upon a certain point of view. And morality is usually a point of view. Doesn't mean don't be immoral, though. Just that you have to have empathy. You have to be able to, you have to have what's called strategic empathy. If you're at war with a person, you have to be able to see the reality that they see. If not, you'll never find peace. You'll never be able to beat that person either, because you won't be able to predict them because you don't understand their value system. So you have to understand who it is you're fighting. Always. You have to have empathy for them.
Mark said, Patton wrote at length he was a reincarnated Roman soldier.
A lot of things, too. He believed in souls. He was a cool dude. His book, War as I Knew It, was really good. Really good book.
Yeah, we should maybe do a show about him one day.
Yeah, he was a good dude. He spent a lot of his own money to keep his tanks running in between wars. He was a very unusual officer. Kind of an officer from another era. He was kind of like somebody out of the 1700s. He wasn't a corporate type officer that I came up with in service. Kind of an artist type officer. Although here's another thing. There's some myth to Patton. Patton did good shit, but there were a lot of U.S. generals like that. He just tended to get the spotlight because he was an oddball. He did do some cool missions, though. You know, his armored unit was good. But there were a lot of them like that.
All right. So you want to get back to the show? Okay, here we go.
Go ahead.
So where did we get distracted? Okay, so Daniel's upset that he can't fix it. He can't punch the ghost.
Can't punch a ghost.
You know what I mean? He didn't really seem like he wanted to punch the ghost. He just kind of wanted to fix the problem because obviously his wife was upset. And she's denying it, which I think is kind of like worrying him some, because it's like one day they're out in the yard and he's like, she very, very clearly saw something, like a ghost, like standing there. And he's like, hey, do you see something? What are you saying? And she's like, nope, don't see anything. Nope, nope, nope. And she just like would not, you know, she just wouldn't like cop to it. And so I think he was starting to get worried about it. She said she was getting more and more like upset and like starting to lose her mind. And she's like, man, if I told Daniel all the shit that was going on, he'd think I was a nut and all this other kind of stuff. So at one point, not too long into this, like Daniel and Rebecca take this day trip to Williamsburg, like as a kind of like just mini vacation or whatever. But Rebecca is just really not having a good time. She's, you know, just she's kind of feels she said she felt like she was in a downward spiral at this point. Now, while they're driving home, Daniel puts the radio on and Rebecca starts hearing this old woman's voice coming through the car radio. And of course, Daniel can't hear it. So she says, she tells Daniel, write down the name Elizabeth Pratt Jones. She said it's this old woman talking, and she's like, this woman is saying all kind of stuff about her property being stolen from her. You know, her slaves were taken and she wasn't paid for them, that kind of stuff. So at this point, Daniel finally gets to the thing. He's like, man, he's like, she has been, like, maybe seeing ghosts, like, for a lot longer than she admitted to. Because, like I said, for a long time, she only admitted to seeing that ghost boy and tried to downplay that. But she never told him that she'd been able to see ghosts her whole life. So he's just now starting to figure that out because she seemed... I don't think she seemed, like, kind of calm about it, but she's like, hey, write down this name, yada, yada. So Rebecca said that she later saw this same old woman in her house... and kept, like, repeating the name, so she knew the name. And it's getting to the point, she said, where she can't sleep because all these ghosts, I guess, keep fucking with her. Like, she keeps hearing their voices and shit like that, and it's, like, keeping her awake. So she finally has had enough, and she's, like, freaking out, and she's like, just call. Now, see, like I said, call the investigators. I don't know if she's saying, like, call the different investigators because I think these were different ones that came, or call back the ones that came before, you know what I mean? Because it seemed like it was two different groups, but I'm not entirely sure. So she's like, call him and I'll tell them everything and we'll sort this all out. So the next day, Daniel talks to a guy who was on the show and was not in shadow or anything like that. And I think they said that his name was Tom Varanus. I think they were saying Varanus. But I couldn't, like, but I don't know how they spelled it. Like, I tried a couple different spellings, but I couldn't really find anything real quick. So apparently this guy, and I don't know how true this is, but apparently this guy was a former NASA engineer who now studies the paranormal from, like, a scientific standpoint. So I don't know if he's, like, part of that other group, because, like I said, he wasn't on their website or anything. So he might have another group that's going on. I don't know. Or maybe he's just, like, on his own. So he comes out one evening with another woman whose name is Melissa Kepley. Now, you might think, because usually the paranormal investigators come out and they're like, oh, and we brought a psychic. This time he didn't bring a psychic. He brought a woman who was a psychologist, I think. Like, or she said she had a psychology background. Like, that's what her degree was in.
How long have we been going?
An hour.
Okay, let me check the cookie.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. We're making a...
Two lasagnas
with eggplant. So he's got to go check and make sure that they're okay. But yeah, so she said she had a background in psychology. That's what her degree was in. So I guess that he brings her along. I don't know if he just, like, doesn't fuck with psychics and stuff, but he brings her along. It's like, we're going to assess, you know, if this woman, like, what she tells us, like, does she have any mental problems or anything like that? Which to me seems like what you probably should be doing. I mean, the cases that we wrote about with Steve Mara, who's, you know, a parapsychologist that I wrote a couple books with, they do that as well. They always do, like, a mental health assessment on the people that are making the claims just to make sure that this person is not having some kind of, like, mental health issues that would be making them, you know, see the things they're seeing or hear this or whatever. So that seems like it's one of the first thing that you should do. So I kind of appreciated that this guy did that. So he brings the psychologist and, you know, they interview Rebecca. So, he says they're doing, like, EMF readings around, because they said we wanted to get a baseline of, like, you know, what all the magnetic fields around the house were and see if that was causing hallucinations or any kind of weird phenomena. They said we got kind of, like, a couple weird readings, like, outside, but we figured out it was just coming from, like, the air conditioning unit or whatever, so it was, like, nothing. So it's like they didn't really get anything weird outside or inside until they... get around Rebecca. Now, so they had an EMF meter and they had a compass, because they said we use that sometimes too, because obviously a compass can find a magnetic field. So they said we're up there in the hallway and Rebecca was standing in the hallway. She's like, both the EMF meter and the compass, like, went apeshit. They said the compass was just, like, spinning around and, like, the EMF reader was, like, going off the chart or anything. So, like, so it seemed like it was like she was making it do that, like that they just went crazy when she was around. Now, what Tom Verena said, he said, this is a reading that you would see, like, for example, when an entity was present, not so much a person. They said they hadn't really seen anything like that with the instruments reacting like that to a person. I don't know if that's true or not. I don't, but, you know, I wasn't there, like I said, so it could be anything. So so after that happens, they're just kind of like, lady, I think there's some shit you're not telling us. Because at this point, like I said, she hadn't told them about the whole I've been able to see ghosts my whole life situation. So so finally she's like, okay, I'll spill the beans. So she finally spills the beans, and she's basically like, yeah, I've been seeing ghosts my whole entire life, and tells them the whole story, like everything that she's ever gone through, like her whole entire life. And Daniel is like pretty flabbergasted. So basically she says, and I don't know if she said this in real life, but that's what the actress did. She said, the house isn't haunted, I am. That's basically what she says. And she's like, and she knew the whole time, and she's like, yeah, sorry, I didn't tell you, blah, blah, blah. So, so then the team, like, Tom and Melissa, they go off to the College of William and Mary to do some historical research to see if the stuff that she said, like, checked out. So now while that was going on, and I thought this part was interesting because it seemed like, I don't know, like this one event seemed kind of like it would be on any other episode. It would have been like the big climactic thing. But on this one, they almost kind of like glided over it a little bit, which I thought was kind of strange. So something happens in the house that seems to, I don't know if it really scared Rebecca and Daniel enough, but they did move out. Now, what they showed on the show, it was like they were in, it seemed like Rebecca, like, opened the door to, like, a room, like, off the hall or something like that in the house, and then there was, like, she saw, like, some kind of light, and then at the end of the room or the end of the hall was, like, a shadow dude, right? It was just, like, a shadow dude, and it was almost like they portrayed it like a wind, but she said it was just an overwhelming feeling of, like, fear and sadness. Like, it was coming at her. Like, so it was almost kind of like they were hinting that this was, like, an evil entity of some kind or something. Now, from what I could determine, because I'm, like, I'm very careful about how I'm, like, now, what exactly did they say and, like, what did they mean by that? Because I know, like, they show stuff on the show and that's not always, hey, it's Pookie. Hi, Pookie. Look, you're on the show.
She's like, I don't care. I'm going
to
jump
like,
down.
She's like, I don't care. I don't want to be on the lap. I don't want to be on the lap. I only be on the lap for a couple of minutes. Oh, yeah. No, actually, she's being chill.
Yeah.
She's being chill. Oh, she's like, really squitch it. Squitch it. But yeah, so I kind of feel like the implication was that Daniel saw it too, because he said, they showed him in the reenactment, like, come in and being, like, looking like, what the fuck? And, the, like, they showed, like, the shadow man. And the real guy said, I felt it before I saw it. So I'm guessing that he meant he felt its presence or whatever this fear and sadness kind of shit was. But then he saw it, too. And he said that he got the impression that this might have been a bad omen, which I'm imagining is what prompted them to move, like the fact that he finally saw something or felt something, and probably she was like, told you, this is like what's been going on the whole time. So, but they kind of like skipped over it a little bit on the show, like they kind of show it, but it was like a couple seconds, and I was just like, wait, what just happened? Okay, so they end up, so they moved to another house. Like I said, it's a sentence. It's like, oh, by the way, they moved. I was like, okay. So they moved to another house, and everything's quiet for a couple weeks. So the investigators who went and did the historical research, they come back. And they say, because remember how Rebecca said about she heard the voices, like the two men's voices, and then something sounded like a plane crash and said something about a Mustang and blah, blah, blah. So the investigators come back and they said in 1950, there was a pilot and I guess a co-pilot or whatever in a P-51 Mustang. And they said it crashed only 600 yards away from where their old house is. So there's that.
That's not very far.
Yeah. So now to make sure, they wanted to make sure that Rebecca wasn't faking or that she already knew about that and was like just giving them like the information. So they essentially test her. What they do is they bring her a list with like 20 to 25 names on it. Only two of these, one of them is the pilot, one of them is co-pilot. And they also bring like a whole bunch of photos to see if she can pick the pilots like out of the photos. Now they said she instantly like picked out their names. She's like, yeah, this one's this and this one's that. And they said she even told them some extra information, like, oh yeah, this guy is Henry blah blah blah, but he likes being called Hank more. And she had like all of this other information about them. So there's that. She was also able to tell them when she had all the photos, she said, hey, one of the guys isn't here. So, because she obviously had seen him and knew what he looked like. So she knew that the photo of him was not there, and they were just kind of like, yeah, she passed that test. So they also tell her that they found records of an old woman named Elizabeth Pratt Jones, just like she said. The woman was from the 1700s. And her husband's business had failed, and they subsequently had all their property repossessed. Weird thing about this, though, is that this woman lived 30 miles away from that house. So they're not really sure why the woman would show up in her house 30 miles away, unless she was, like, the only person that could see ghosts in the area, and so she was just going around trying to show herself to people. Just
picking it up on the ghost internet.
Picking it up on the ghost internet, I guess.
Came through the ghosts or the Google search.
Yeah, she's like, who is it around here that can see ghosts? Can I pop into somebody's house and, like, communicate and some shit like that? But, yeah, so maybe that's what it was. So, yeah, 30 miles, I don't know. It was really weird. Maybe 30 miles is not that much.
Might be the other way around. Maybe the person that can see the ghost is subconsciously searching for a ghost in the area and goes, oh, there's one 30 miles. And then, poop, there it is.
Yeah, just like it's just like an app on your phone.
It's like an app on your phone. It's just in your subconscious.
It's like Randonautica, where you kind of tell it like you want to find a dead body or a ghost or something. It tells you where the shit is. Yeah, maybe it's that. So now at the new house, Rebecca said she doesn't see the boy anymore. They couldn't find out anything about the boy because she's like she saw him all the time, but she never got an impression of what his name was and couldn't really figure out like what his deal was. So he couldn't really be identified. And she didn't see the pilots again in the new house. But apparently she said she still sees other ghosts sometimes and has kind of learned to live with it and accept it. And everybody knows about it now and everybody lived happily ever after. So that was pretty much the end of that show. Colin through the ghost vine, says Anna.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe it's that. I mean, it could be.
It was a good episode.
It was. It wasn't like, it was a little bit unusual because it's not like structured like they normally are.
Yeah, it's because the investigators were involved. That's why.
I did appreciate that the investigators that were on this show, like, didn't seem... Like I said, that guy really didn't seem to have time for, like, psychics and stuff. He's like, I didn't bring a psychic. I brought a psychologist to make sure that you're not crazy and that you're not having, like, some mental problems.
I don't blame him. I wouldn't get it. I wouldn't get any psychic involved.
I wouldn't either.
And if you do get a psychic involved, use the same one over and over again that has a good track record. But I really wouldn't do that because if you actually look at these cases, the pattern is they get a psychic or some kind of seer or some kind of a local witch involved, and the case gets crazier, all right, based on this chick's input, which tells me that it's more likely... She's fucking spinning a yarn and fucking pulling shit out of her ass, which makes the fucking story go fucking wonky and crazy. So now they have a crazy story over the phenomenon, and now you can't separate the two. It's better not to say anything or involve any of those people. Just let the phenomenon play out. Record what the phenomenon is. Don't try to interpret it. Don't try to put a story with it. You don't know any of that. Just record the phenomenon. Take the phenomenon for what it is. That's what happened to us when the poltergeist thing fucking came about. We didn't get any psychics or anything. We just fucking saw everything moving and tried to keep track of what was moving and tried to make sense out of it. We never really could. No real story behind it. It just moved things and interacted with you. You know.
I mean, I kind of really did like, because I was saying while you were gone, while you were downstairs, I said what about them bringing the psychologist along. I kind of feel like that's how Steve Mara does it.
Yeah.
He doesn't, I mean, he even told me a few times it's like that he very, 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 very rarely like fucks with psychics. Like they don't bring them along because it just like muddies the water. I mean, they usually just try to come at everything from like as objective a point of view as possible. And like I said, they do psychiatric kind of evaluations of all the people that are reporting the phenomena to make sure that they're not having issues, like mental issues, and they just basically just record. They do a historical background on the house. Yeah. They do that, but doesn't he usually do that after?
Yeah, it's all after. You record first.
Yeah.
All right, you want to try to get photographs, record what people say, their commentaries, their descriptions of what happened if you didn't see it, if you didn't catch it on film, and try to get audio recordings of audio phenomenon. And then afterwards, you try to figure out what the fuck happened. You don't do it at the time. Doing that at the time, especially with psychics and shit, man, you'll taint the case.
Yeah, because that's the thing. If you know the history of the house, like a whole family got murdered in this house, for example, like before you go to the house to investigate, that's going to color your data because you're going to be expecting things along that line.
Right.
You know what I mean? So it probably is better. And I like that they did that in this case where it's like she basically, like I said, if any of this is true, I don't really know. But it's like she basically said, hey, I just hear voices in my head. It's saying this, that, and the other. Write it down. And then later they went and looked it up and they said, okay, by the way, this, this, and this. And that all lined up with what you said. But she didn't really seem to know anything about the shit that had happened there beforehand. So I think that's kind of the way to go about it. But I don't know. I kind of feel like a lot of the episodes, like when they do have psychics on there, like a lot of times psychics will go out of their way to say, well, when we get there, we always tell the people like not to tell us anything like about what happened in the house or what they've seen or blah, blah. But the thing about it is that if it's a house particularly that is kind of well known locally for example, like something bad happening there, then that's pretty easy to find out.
Yeah.
And I think that sometimes, and I'm not shitting on all of the people or not calling them liars or anything like that, but I do kind of feel like some of those kind of people will research a place beforehand because if they know the house that they're going to, I mean, that's what I would do.
Yeah.
If I was trying to scam somebody, which I wouldn't because I don't do that kind of thing. But yeah, you would like look into the history of the house and be like, ooh, somebody got murdered here or some, you know what I mean? It's like
that one very famous parapsychologist, I think he might have been from Germany. He was the one that did the Mr. Gordy case. He was old when that fucking case was happened. He said he found good success with a particular trance medium that he used. They'd do an investigation, and then afterwards, he'd bring in that trance medium, and that guy, I think it was a guy, he'd go into a trance, and he could see what the problem was, and he could fix it a lot of times. Then the phenomena would end. But that was done after the investigation.
Right. Yeah, I kind of feel like that's sort of the best way to go about it. So that was one thing I appreciated about this episode is that it actually showed a real investigation team, the guy who was like an engineer and then like a psychologist, and they didn't have a psychic involved or anything like that.
Going into a trance, going astral, and dealing with it directly on the astral plane is the way to go. You just need to ask fucking, what was his name? Reverend Moon. From the moon. He actually toppled the Soviet Empire in astral form.
Yeah, that was him that did that.
Yeah, that's how that happened. He claimed. Yeah, Reverend Moon.
I still want to do a show about him. Put it in the poll a couple times, but it didn't win. But it's still in my list.
Out of all the cults, Reverend Moon, I think, was probably the best one.
Have to join a cult.
Yeah, if you have that, that'd be
I mean, please don't. But
the only thing that I think was that I didn't like about Moon is that the Moonies would separate people from their families if they left the church. Which that's he's not supposed to do.
That's bullshit. All cults do that. That's one of the defining characteristics of a cult. Yeah. Matter of fact.
Yeah, but evidently Moon went astral one time and he saw communism for what it was and then pulled a couple of strings in the damn psychic world and caused the Soviet Union to unravel. That's some shit.
I mean, that's a pretty good story.
That's
like,
some
I
shit
could,
there.
Now I want to fucking...
Yeah.
Man.
Yeah.
I wish I was like more of a huckster because it's like I could come up with all kind of crazy shit that I did on the astral plane. I could write a whole book about it, go on the lecture circuit and everything. I wouldn't be able to keep a straight face though.
Well, the thing is about that though is
I wouldn't be able to keep a straight face.
The thing is like, about yeah, that totally is that, that is that like some of the people in his church like said no, he told us years beforehand that he did that. that it was coming down. It was going to take time. But anybody could have said that, because you could see that the Soviet Union was having a lot of troubles. You know, it was having a lot of trouble. But that's fucking funny, though. That's a good angle.
Well, it's just kind of like when you see, you know, back in the day, I'm sure she's dead now, but back in, like, was it in the National Enquirer, like, back in the 80s and stuff? Mm-hmm. They had that psychic Jean Dixon. You remember her?
Yeah.
Yeah, she's got to be dead now. She's not. She's probably 200 years old.
She's the one that claimed that those girls were dead, but it turned out they were in fucking...
No, that was Sylvia Brown.
Sylvia Brown, that's right. Jean Dixon. Which one is that?
She was the one that was always... I mean, she was always in the Enquirer. Like, Jean Dixon predicts...
Okay, yeah.
She would always predict... I don't think she so much got involved in, like, murders and stuff, but she's more seemed to predict, like, celebrity stuff and, like, politics and that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. I just kind of feel like anybody that knows anything about cultural trends or anything like that, it's pretty easy to make a bunch of predictions about what's going to happen this year. Hey, a member of the royal family is going to fuck up. Hey, this, that, and the other thing. Hey, there's going to be an earthquake in California. Yeah. It's like, it's always shit like that. I'm like,
it's gonna be a bad hurricane in Florida.
Well, play to the statistics. And the thing about it is that the human brain is kind of structured in such a way that normally most people will only remember what you got right, and they won't remember all the stuff that you got wrong. So by the time, like, if you get like one or two lucky hits, everybody will remember that. Holy shit, she predicted 9/11, or she predicted like this big earthquake or a plane crash or whatever. Everyone's gonna remember that, and they're gonna forget like the 30 other predictions she made that did not come true.
So just make lots of predictions.
Well, that's what they do. That's why they make
Nostradamus.
That's why they make so many. And like I said, and they always play with the statistics. They don't come with they don't usually come up with anything too crazy or too out there. They'll always come up with something that's pretty likely.
Yeah.
You know, at least from a statistical standpoint. So, and they'll be vague enough that it could kind of
just like Nostradamus's quatrains.
Right.
He's using archaic, weird
why are they
French
still talking about Nostradamus to this day? Because he knew that.
He's using this archaic fucking French. It was archaic in the time that he's using it. And it's poems all out of order. And you can translate it into any language you want now and kind of get that shit to sound like something that happened. You can scry something out of it. But only after the fact, because you're trying to get something to happen to fit all this shit.
Right.
And you go, well, that fits, you know. So this must have been a prediction. It's never the other way around. Here's the prediction, and oh, I know what's going to happen. It's never happens.
They're all post-dictions.
So, yeah, right. They're never predictions.
No.
No.
Because if it was a prediction, a real prediction, they'd be like, okay, at 7:32 p.m. on this particular day in this particular city, this motherfucker is going to get assassinated. And then it happens. That's a prediction.
Right.
Not some random motherfucker somewhere by a stream is going to get shot in the face. That's not that's too vague.
Right.
That could be anything.
Well, even the so-called Nostradamus predictions that predict Hitler and all this kind of, they don't quite say Hitler.
No.
And they say Hister, which is a river.
That was a river, yeah.
It's a river, Hister, is what he's talking about. And then it vaguely kind of sounds like something about that. And then in the famous Man Who Saw Tomorrow, which is a movie we grew up with, we fucking loved
with
it.
With Orson Welles.
It's bullshit, but it's so fun. It's so creepy. Yeah. He'd have you fucking going. They would take fucking 7 or 8 quatrains fucking written down in 4 or 5 centuries and chop them up and put them together into one Nostradamus prediction that was not in the book. It's 4 of them mashed together to try to make this sound like he's predicting Hitler. Although, what's funny is that the movie kind of predicts a little bit Saddam Hussein and Scud missiles and New York. And the World Trade Center being attacked, but that's different events being mashed into one. But the quatrains don't say that. Just the fucking movie kind of shows that.
Right.
The quatrains don't say that. It just goes to show you how you can kind of predict anything.
Well, the thing about it, too, is that since the age of the internet, people have made up quatrains and put them out there, and then they get repeated as real ones, like the more they get passed around. So some of that stuff wasn't even Nostradamus.
No, it's fakes.
They're fakes.
And the Germans in World War II did that. the certain parts of like SS propaganda units were faking Nostradamus predictions and putting them out.
And some of those, I think, might still be circulating too.
Yeah, faking them. You know, that were like fake predictions that the Germans would win certain battles. You know, that.
Yeah, which is, it's like psychological warfare.
Psychological warfare, yeah.
Tammy said, I predict Tom will go off on a tangent during one of the shows.
There you go. What kind of fucking prediction is that? That's a given. That's a fucking given.
See?
I smell
Tammy's psychic.
Fucking Tammy's not psychic. Tammy's just paying attention.
American Military 100 said, didn't LaToya Jackson have a psychic hotline?
Yeah.
Did she did LaToya she Jackson sure, have one? Dionne Warwick had one. Yeah. Well, she had that with Psychic that. Friends, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Because Dan Bell uses a lot of clips from that, like
fucking
on his
hilarious.
Show, because they're so
that
fucking
was back
funny.
Fucking Ricky Lake and all that shit, late night, coming back from working
that
the
midnight
shift.
That was like late 80s, early 90s, man.
Yeah, and the only thing on would be like fucking Jerry Springer and fucking infomercials trying to get you to fucking call some fucking 1-800 number. Yeah, I remember that.
1-900 number.
1-900.
If it was 1-800, it'd be free.
LaToya Jackson fucking, yeah. And of
I didn't
course, you weren't
even
talking
hers.
To her. That was just her system.
Even her system. They probably just called up and said, hey, can we use your name and image?
Yeah.
And, like, we'll give you $1 million or whatever. She's like, sure, whatever.
That was before the internet.
Yeah. Zach said, I still think my favorite fake psychic is Miss Cleo. Yeah. We like Miss Cleo with her fake Jamaican accent.
Yeah. I remember that shit, man.
That one was, she was fun.
Yeah.
That's what's so funny. It's like, I think, like,
people bought into that shit.
These kids today.
people bought into
I
that
I promised
shit.
Myself that when I got old, I wasn't going to say these kids today. So I'm saying it ironically. But these kids today. Yeah, you don't. Before there was the internet.
You have no idea.
Sad ass people would call these 1-900 numbers. Yeah. And it wasn't just psychics. It was psychics or weird sex lines, like fetish lines. It was.
Yeah. Well, men's magazines was something that does not around anymore. It's fucking porn. And the back of those things, half the damn pages were nothing but little ads to call 1-900 numbers for fucking sex, phone sex.
Yeah.
And it was like fucking $9.99 a minute and shit. You'd be racking up
because usually they'd be like, well, the psychic lines, I think they were usually like $3.50 for the first minute and then 99 cents each additional minute or something like that. But their whole thing, like the people that they employed, where their whole thing was like, keep the people on the line as long as possible. Because most of those people were actually like working from home, actually. And obviously, like, it probably shouldn't have to be said, but all those phone sex lines, those were all just, like, models and stock photos and stuff. Yeah. Like, the person you were calling absolutely did not.
No, of course not.
And that's the thing about it, too, is, like, the psychic friends, you know, you weren't calling Dionne Warwick.
No.
You were just calling some random ass mother. You were calling some random ass woman in a trailer in Austin, Texas somewhere who was, like... talk about your problems.
Late 90s were a trip because it was it felt like the very, very end of the 80s. It's like 80s is so fucking played out that it's fucking breaking apart. And it's slowly being replaced by AOL.com and online shit, which is like an all-new world, man. And fucking... when you were young and you're first getting into the online scene, back of the old internet... it was like you were first tasting freedom, getting away from the stale fucking television programs and the fucking terrible mall culture and shit. It was fucking great, man. And like you were the first people to get off of the fucking to get off of the fucking plantation.
It's like walking on the moon.
You're free. You know? Everybody else, they're still in prison. You know, it was fucking cool. But now they just made the internet television now, basically.
Well, you knew that was
going to come.
Well, I mean, when you get right down to it, I was thinking about this the other day. I don't know why I think random shit like this. But sometimes I think to myself, it's like, oh, you know, it's kind of a shame how everybody just kind of like, you know, sits around watching, you know, movies on Netflix or whatever. I mean, I do it too.
It was
like,
worse.
Or whatever. Yeah. But the thing about it is that I'm like, yeah, but what the fuck else is there to do? Man, you go back like 200 years... what were those people doing? Just sitting around by candlelight, like reading books to each other.
Yeah. If they were lucky, they were playing with a cat.
Right.
Yeah.
So it's just kind of like, that's all everybody's been doing.
Yeah.
Just entertaining themselves. If they had leisure time.
Yep.
If you didn't have TV, you read a book. Or you went to a play.
There are paintings of late medieval and early Renaissance girls sitting there with paintings of them and their cat or them and their ferret. You know what I mean? And that was some high-tech shit. I got a cat.
I've got a cat.
Yeah. Look what I got. I got a ferret. You know? It's cool.
We have two cats.
Yeah. But you know, there wasn't any technology.
That's what I'm saying. So it's just kind of like, you know, people can piss and moan all they want about, oh, yeah, these kids today are just staring at their phones and shit like that, yeah, all the time. And I was like, well, back in the old days before they had any technology, it's like, well, they would just sit there and, like, stare at books. Yeah. Or they would
slept when the sun went down. They'd run candles, have sex, asleep. But you had to get used to all that damn body hair and no bathing. Especially in the winter. Those motherfuckers are too cold.
Well, everybody was furry and stinky back then.
Stinky motherfuckers.
So it's not like anybody was any cleaner than anybody else. So,
and then they didn't have any fucking diet to speak of. When you look at the clothes, they were all kind of malformed, little narrow shoulders, and tell you, low protein motherfuckers back in the day. But, you know, that's how it was. They didn't know any better.
Yeah, I mean, and I've said this many times, I wouldn't even, if somebody came to me tomorrow and said, hey, I invented a cool-ass time machine, do you want to go back to the 80s? I don't think I would. Like, there was a lot of cool shit about the 80s, I'm not saying that, but I wouldn't want to go back to a time before internet or before any of that stuff. It's like, because everything back then, even though it was cooler and maybe you appreciated stuff more, everything was, like, difficult. It's like, if I wanted to see a fucking movie... Like, I grew up and I really liked weird-ass movies, and the town where I grew up, they never played weird-ass movies in the town because it was like a redneck town, so I never got to see it in the theater. I'd have to wait and wait and wait, and then, like, oh, now it's out on video, but they didn't have it to rent in my town either because redneck town.
You'd have to buy it.
So I'd have to buy it.
And they were expensive.
Yeah, it's like, I'd have to save up, and it's like, oh, yeah, we're going to New York City, and then I'd have to go and, like, buy a whole bunch of shit while I was up there because they didn't sell it, and they didn't have the internet. So I had to spend like a fuck ton of money. Same with like cool clothes, yeah, and all that kind of stuff. They didn't sell anything like that, like around where I was. So everything now is just like so.
It's convenient.
Easy.
Yeah.
It's just so easy. If I want to watch, like, I can think 99.99% of the movies that I want to watch. Oh, I want to watch this movie like right now. Bink.
Yeah.
I can either watch it for free or I can watch it for like $3. I mean, that's amazing. That's amazing. Like used to be, you had to wait. Like I said. Yeah. You know?
I gotta check the food.
All right, so we've been on for an hour and a half.
Yeah, okay.
So I guess we'll wrap it up and we're done talking about the show anyway.
I gotta check that shit.
So tomorrow we're gonna do a matinee show. I don't know what movie we're gonna do though. Honestly, I know that I keep saying we really have to do Godfather 2, but so we gotta watch something tonight, but honestly, I'm really tired. Like I woke up so early this morning for whatever reason. So I kind of just want to watch something kind of short and kind of fun and blah, blah, blah. Because tomorrow night, we have to watch The Green Mile because that's the movie that we're doing for the movie retrospective. And I'm pretty sure The Green Mile is like 3 fucking hours long. So I'm going to have to like gird my loins for that one. So tonight, I just want to watch something stupid and fun and everything like that. So, I mean, we did Elvis yesterday, and that was, like, really fun. But that was also really long, although it didn't seem long. But that was, like, really fun. That was just a fun movie. So, I don't know. Maybe I'll just watch, like, a fun slasher or a fun horror movie or something like that. But we'll find out tomorrow. You'll find out same time we find out, maybe. So, thank you, everybody, for dropping by today and hanging out with us on a haunting show. Hopefully you enjoyed it. And we will see you again talking about a movie tomorrow evening. Good night.